Thank you for downloading this episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. To get more episodes and explore other SDN and network automation resources, visit sdn.ipspace.net.
In 2015, the service providers got sick and tired of IETF dragging their feet developing the YAN model for network device configuration and said, we are sick and tired of this thing dragging on for years, we'll do it on our own, and if the vendors implement that, fine, if not, we'll switch the vendors, who cares? So they started this thing called OpenConfig, and surprisingly, in pretty short amount of time, they managed to agree on things that IETF couldn't agree on for years, published their models, and told the networking vendors, it's either this or we are going away. Not surprisingly, the networking vendors reacted, and the first two that shipped OpenConfig support in their devices were Cisco with iOS XR and Juniper with Junos release 16.1. Today with me to discuss OpenConfig and the impact on that on the networking industry, what it is, what it's all about, and how it's supported in Junos is Marcel Wiget from Juniper Networks.
Hi.
So before we go into the details, what are you doing at Juniper?
Sure.
And what pulled you into this configuration mess?
Right. Well, I've been with Juniper for over 7 years. I started in the field as a system engineer in Europe. I'm still based in Europe, but recently moved into product management, so-called to the dark side, closer to engineering. And I'm part of the product management team focusing on Junos and automation. That's why OpenConfig kind of fits in nicely there.
So let's start with the basics. What is OpenConfig and why is it important?
OpenConfig is really an initiative driven by operators, mainly led by Google, to basically come up with data models that are generic enough so they can be applied to multiple network vendor devices. Be kind of using the same model, the same configuration language on different devices.
So they are aiming for the nirvana that we never reached, where you could configure Cisco iOS XR and iOS and Junos and Arista EOS with the same configuration commands.
That's right. They aim pretty high. If you think back, and you sure you do, 25 years back when the simple network management protocol was defined, they had the same goal, at least for configuration. Now, did that turn out? Not too well.
So why did that thing fail? And why do you think this one won't fail?
The time has changed, of course. People changed, and certainly people realize that it's not good enough anymore to do things through the CLI. You want to have an API to configure things. But personally, I think the one area that really changed now is that with SNMP, the IETF published a lot of standard MIPS. And if we as a vendor wanted to implement them and augment that with functionality we think that are unique, there was no way to do that on the standard MIP. So every vendor ended up building, in addition to the standard MIP support, also an enterprise-specific MIP. And then you ended up with a dual kind of thingy, and we all know how that turned out. It is used today purely for retrieval of operational statistics, but not for configuration. Now with Yang, that's a different story. They have possibility to augment and to deviate as well. With augmentation, I mean, you can add leaves into a container, so you can support a basic set, but then you can have additional elements in it. Let's say if you support AES and you have some really fancy flag that you need to set or allow the user to set, you can basically just add a leaf next to where it fits in the hierarchy of the configuration.
Okay, so if we go back to SNMP MIPS, because people are probably more familiar with that. SNMP MIP is a tree of data objects, mm-hmm. variables, if you wish, yeah. that usually the network device would populate and you would then read.
Right.
And what you're saying is that it wasn't possible to insert your own entries into the IETF defined tree.
That's correct, because the entries are numbered. And in theory, you could go and just edit the MIP file. But if you do so, what if another vendor does the same thing and they added 33 as the same number that we just added? So that wouldn't really...
So in that case, you would have to have like a registry of extensions per vendor like we have with Radius.
And the does exist in SNMP. You have every enterprise has their own enterprise entry point in the MIP hierarchy, but it's a complete different hierarchy. So
it's a different tree.
It's a different tree. It's disconnected from the actual configuration that the MIP you had.
So and because no one wants people to browse two trees because that's complex, they would create an enterprise MIP, which is a copy of the standard MIP plus the extensions.
It's not just the complexity, I guess. It's also the ambiguity that you have two places to configure the same thing. That's usually not a good idea.
No.
Get inconsistency or who knows which vendor implemented which one. And certainly what was a tiebreaker, so...
Yeah, that's Eliza Yashinska made a great remark on that line in her presentation in my data center course, where she said, "This is how rockets explode."
Oh, yeah, can see that.
Anyway, coming back to SNMP and OpenConfig. So in SNMP, it was impossible, or at least impractical, to extend the IETF standard MIPS.
Yeah,
and you're saying that in YAML, it's easier to do that.
Right.
Why?
Because YANG, by definition, has added these options to add an augmentation, which means you can take the YANG file or schema out of an RFC, or in this case from OpenConfig, and then you basically give the compiler another file which has an augmentation definition. And interesting enough, you can't really do that in the same file. It has to be a different file, which makes it easier as well to know which one is really the standard one and which is the augmentation. And in that augmentation, you basically define the same container again and say, now I'm going to add something into it.
Well, in theory, you could modify the original file, but that would be considered impolite.
Yeah, you could modify, but then you would have to modify it in the sense that you just edit the entry in there. You can't use the augmentation statement. At least when I tried, it didn't work. And then I was told by engineering that now you have to use a separate file.
Okay.
Same goes for the deviation, which is really a way for changing things, which could... You would say that's not a good thing to do, but one way that can be useful is to say this entry, which is not mandatory by the OpenConfig, but in our implementation, for whatever obscure reason, we have to have that setting, otherwise you couldn't configure it. So we could just add the mandatory flag to one of the existing leaves.
Also, deviation is modification of standard structures, whereas augmentation is addition
of
new structures.
Yes. And another good reason for deviation is if you have multiple ways or multiple things in a schema that the standard has defined, but your device doesn't support it, then you can say, okay, this tree or this part, our device doesn't support, so we just block that out.
So if the schema has some optional parts and you know you're not supporting them, you can block them out so that people configuring your box know that if they would try to use this attribute on your box would say, go away.
Right. For example, if you take the interface with optical information, there is at least an OpenConfig one that defines that it can enter wavelengths. And if you have like a colored interface, but your device only supports like SFP plugins that don't have these kind of tunable parameters, then it's better to disable that to not give the false hope to the user. Oh, cool.
I can do that. I can't.
Wavelength. Then you don't know what the outcome is.
Yeah. Well, the worst thing is that the device would accept that and do nothing.
Right. And then you don't know what went on. And that brings me to a point which is important in OpenConfig, which they made a clear statement about. They always have two hierarchies inside the same container for a certain function. What I mean by that, they have a config tree and they have a state tree. And the idea really is that if you send a configuration using netconf format to a device, then you want to be able to read back what the device has configured. And by configured, I mean what really is actually configured on the device and implemented. And if you think about millions of filters you would push down, that takes time to get them active. And you want to know if they're active. So they separated state from config. So you can read the config tree back, which is, of course, always what you just said earlier.
Which is show running.
But the state might actually not reflect what you asked for, not your intent, but what the device really has implemented at that given time. And the IETF, that kind of... some drafts, they created a separation as well, and others might not. But even the ones that I've seen, like the Softwire, they separated it, but they called it Softwire State and Softwire Config. And in OpenConfig, what they would do is like interface state, interface config.
So in the IETF model, the split is at the very top, whereas in the OpenConfig model, the split is within individual configurable objects.
I'm not 100% sure about the IETF, I'm just by what I have seen so far, but the clear statement by the OpenConfig group. And apparently there is a disagreement.
So in SNMP terms, the config parameters would be read-write variables and the state parameters would be read-only variables.
That's right. And in Open or in Yang, you have the so-called non-config or config false entry, which are then values that only can be read back.
So you can push changes by creating the right data structure that describes you what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can read the same data objects back. And if you read both the config and the data part of the data object, then you can see in one go
at what stage.
Yeah, what has been configured and what is really operational.
That's right, yes. So it's an interesting approach. Of course, in the past, you, with any vendor's device, you push the config down and then use show commands or the equivalent that you use through an API to read that back. But usually the show commands are completely structured differently from what you actually configured, obviously.
Oh, and they change over releases.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Unless if you ask for structured output, then of course it should be backwards. And at least our engineering takes a big pride in not breaking backwards compatibility.
So this all sounds super exciting, and I'm guessing there is a but in this statement. So the first problem I might see is what can be configurable with this?
Not everything, of course.
Oh, I expected the but.
I mean, it's interesting that the consortium OpenConfig is a team of operators, and everybody can join except vendors, at least for now. Having said that, they, of course, search a close relationship with all the vendors because in the end, they need somebody to implement.
Yeah, you have to implement stuff.
But they really came up with the models. And of course, if you have a need, then you define or describe the models first, the ones that you need actually in your network, which is, I think, a very good way of getting things fast. And if you look back at the first OpenConfig schemas have been published, I just looked it up this morning on GitHub. It was in September 2015, so it's a little bit over a year ago. And the models they have are like interfaces, BGP, basic MPLS configuration, what else, VLANs, IGP. So really basic functionalities.
So the things that a Google or an ISP service provider would need.
Right. And if you have needs for others, I know there are people working on firewall filter definitions, quality of service, and so. But right now, the ones that are published there are really the basic ones.
So for the moment, this seems to be more like a service provider play.
Oh, yes, definitely, yes. Yeah. Despite, no, true, yeah. I was just thinking in my head, all the different companies that are listed there, but they're mostly service providers, yes.
Yeah. So if you want to use this in an enterprise network, you're most welcome, but you will only be able to configure things that make sense to the big service providers.
Well, having said that, I mean, what else do you need from interface definitions, routing, BGP?
Oh,
but probably plenty. But
with this statement, I'm wondering why the code base for Junos and iOS is so bloated.
Well, I may go on the limb, but I'm not sure it's because of enterprises.
Okay.
let's leave it at that.
Okay, let's not go down there. That's bad. We discussed the data models. Right. So now we know that Yang data model is a tree.
Mm-hmm.
It has leaves and containers, and they don't have numbers. They have names.
Right.
Which allows you to insert new thingies in there because you just assign different name.
Right.
By the way, when you insert your new attribute, leaf, let's say,
yep.
How do you make the name unique so that no other vendor can step on your toes?
There, good question. The use is, by definition, every file you create has a namespace.
Mm-hmm.
And that namespace is like a prefix, colon, and then you have your attribute. So with that, you really get a unique entry.
So if you just use your vendor name as the namespace, then you're okay.
Yeah. I mean, to keep that unique, there's no, at least to my knowledge, there's no central repository to do things. And there you could, I mean, if I would publish one that starts with Cisco or something, then yes, I might collide something. So the good news is you can actually retrieve those models, those schemas from the device, which is also a difference from SNMP, where you kind of have to find those MIPS, the enterprise-specific ones, on different web pages.
Ah, so the device is now stored Yank definitions
yes.
in the code,
yes.
so you can retrieve that as text files.
That's right, yes. Okay. And in case of OpenConfig, even we implemented in a way that we supply an additional package to a Junos release, which you can download and install. And going forward, it's actually independent of the software release, which is also cool. If the OpenConfig Consortium adds new models, then we can react really quickly by incorporating that new Yank schema. And of course, that's only half of the story. You also need then some translation happening under the hood to basically make sense out of that schema and translate that to whatever your local daemons understand. And all that is actually packaged and scripted in human readable format. You can call it script or translation script, and we package that and make it available again. So you don't have to wait for the next Junos release.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll get the details
sure.
of that
yeah, sure.
In just a minute.
Okay.
I just have like two more questions on the generics.
Mm-hmm.
So Yank is the data model. It's human readable, like MIP definitions are human readable.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we can argue whether they are or not, but that's a different story.
True.
Then somehow you have to build the data structure according to this Yank model, and it has to be sent over the wire to the device.
Yeah.
And in SNMP, we use that crazy obscure thing called ASN.1.
ASN1, right.
What are we using here?
Here we're using NetConf.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really an XML, using XML structured data, which is sent typically over Secure Shell.
So you would establish an SSH session on port 22 or on port 830 for NetConf.
That's right. You need a NetConf stream and
yeah.
you can use it either on, as you just said.
And then you would send some weird thingies starting with less than sign and ending with greater than sign, which some people call XML.
Right. But having said that, that's still better than a binary encoding of OID numbers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's, you can actually take a packet capture and you assume you are can look into the Secure Shell session. But if you can, or if you trace it on the device, you actually see the XML.
Well, you have some chance of actually reading that.
Exactly, yes. And copy-pasting for testing as well.
What if I hate XML? Can I use JSON?
You can, yes. It's actually, you can use any encoding that is supported, and JSON and XML are the most common one.
And I guess you also don't have to use NetConf. You can use REST API if the device supports that.
I would say so, yes. And what I'm sure about, Google RPC is another transport mm-hmm. mechanism that became more popular recently, mainly because it allows not only to send, have like an interactive session with the device, remote procedure call, you send a command and you read the output back, but you can also keep like a streaming session open where you say, okay, from now on, just keep sending me data and then you will get streaming. And with gRPC, that's what you get over the same connection.
Okay, I love this rabbit trail. So what is gRPC?
That's pretty much all I know about, really. It's a remote procedure call that runs over HTTPS.
Okay. All right, so let's get back on the track.
Right.
Now we know how to describe the data, we know how
mm-hmm.
to encode the data, we know how to send the data to the device.
Right.
And now the device must do something instead of saying what?
Right, it has to understand it, right?
Yeah.
And that's
so
really,
how did you do that in Junos?
In Junos, I can't talk about the other ones, but we always have used Yang internally, or at least a very close representation of it before Yang existed. And with having said that, what we end up doing is adding the Yang schema on the box. If you have a Yang compiler on the device, which allows you to add any kind of Yang schema on the fly even. You can come up with your own. For an internal presentation, I created one which you can store some drinks in it and you can define if it has alcohol content or not. And it's kind of funny. Just to show what you can do.
Oh, yes, so now schema. MX routers can make coffee. And
well, that part I still have to figure out, right?
Ah, that's missing.
That missing part is, in fact, to go back to where we started, you need some translation happening or some code that gets executed. And you have to create that translation. And this is what we provide, of course, for OpenConfig as part of the package. But you can write your own translation scripts either in Slack, so our own programming language, or in Python.
Okay, so first you need to recognize what has been sent. So you need to write or install the Yang data model.
You just have to install the Yang schema. You can really extract it from GitHub or from the ITF page.
And next, when you know what has been sent, now you have to act on it.
Right. Now, let's stop there first. When you just load the schema, you already get a lot of value because you can actually play with that schema and add data to the configuration storage. Of course, you can put in anything in there and check the syntax, but it wouldn't do anything on the box. And there's some other point I can show some examples where that still makes sense. For example, if you want to access that data externally. But
So you can make your Junos box into an object store.
Absolutely, yes, yes. And there are actually examples that we commercialize to do so, yes. But it makes sense. Now, obviously, most of the time you want the device to act on what you have added to the storage. And for that, you have to have a translation script that you link to the schema.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, the translation script is then executed pretty much layman's term at the same time when you hit commit. So basically, when you keep feeding in data to the device, then you say, okay, now execute on that. And then it will actually read through the newly added OpenConfig related statements or config entries you added and translate them into internal or into Junos language and execute them. Or complain back if there is any conflict.
Okay. So when you change the device configuration, you're really changing the values in your own data model.
Well, they are stored in OpenConfig format, first and foremost, and then only under the hood before it's sent into the internal daemons on the device, it gets translated.
So if I do show configuration, I see my...
You only see what you actually add.
My data.
Yes.
If I save the configuration onto the disk,
you still
my data.
That's right.
And that data is dynamically translated into internal device configuration every time I hit commit or every time the device is reloaded.
That's right. So dynamically in the sense of event-driven, yes. And if you, for example, configure in normal Junos syntax the same topic, let's say you start a config in BGP and then you add like a BGP peer use of OpenConfig, that is fine as long as you don't try to, for example, set a different AS number for the same peer. Then, of course, you have a conflict. And
then probably some of the commit scripts will go like, oops, can't do that.
Yeah, which is good. It keeps you in an atomic situation. It will just basically return an error back and say, okay, can't commit.
So the translation scripts are then the magic sauce that translate the configuration in some custom data model into the configuration that you used forever, the device configuration.
Right.
And then that device configuration is pushed through other commit scripts and hopefully it lands as the running configuration.
Right. So basically it takes the input of both stores, creates the internal config out of it and acts upon. And then keeps updating the state.
So this also means that if you change the translation script, you can make the device behave differently with the same configuration.
Absolutely. You could, yeah. You might made it sound negative, but it's actually...
No, it was... I was thinking about fixing bugs.
Well, that, and you can... I mean, we haven't talked about it, but OpenConfig is still a declarative configuration definition. It doesn't really do a lot of abstraction. It's still, you have to know how BGP works with all the details, and you have to configure it accordingly. OpenConfig doesn't help you in any way, nor the ITF.
No, it just standardizes the way how BGP neighbors are configured. You still need to know what BGP neighbors are.
But nothing is stopping you from defining a schema that has more a service definition in mind, which only contains the data that are really relevant for you from the business side and without having any details about the implementation. I mean, one example that we have actually used in a service provider network is to define a pseudovir simply by defining the endpoint information. And by that, I mean like interface and VLAN and then some unique line ID. And I mean, there's no concept of that in any of the BGP models or And the implementation detail are all packaged in this translation script. So you can actually get a right huge level of abstraction.
So you can do in the translation script what other people would be doing with Ansible and Jinja templates.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. You did. Absolutely, yes. It's basically an on-box. And one use case we looked at is, for example, to configure dynamic NAT on Junos with multi-service cards. You enter a lot of lines to get like what your home CPE router does for an end-to-one mapping. And all that complexity you can actually hide into two lines of config. And then you have the execution or the magic happening in the translation.
Of course, this is the ultimate lock-in, so...
As long as
Juniper is the only vendor providing this functionality.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, but it's the value that the carry got out of it is that it's typically very expensive to change the behavior of an OSS BSS system.
Yes. Okay. And I got the point.
Doing that on the device seemed at least less expensive.
So it's because we can't fix the application, we'll implement vMotion across data centers.
The abstraction can happen at every level. And it's just an analogy to SDN. You can either push all the complexity to like this big central controller who magically knows everything and can manage all the nasty details, or you kind of abstract it now in the other extreme to push all the abstraction down to the device. Or maybe there's a middle ground, or you do abstraction on many levels.
So now we know how we configure the device.
Yeah.
And I guess there is no need to reverse engineer the, let's say, OpenConfig data model from the device configuration because you entered data in the OpenConfig way.
Yes.
But how do you get the operational state from whatever you have on the box into the OpenConfig format?
There are basically two ways. The standard way is, of course, all the existing show commands and SNMP and whatever you do, events and such. Those commands are still valid. And of course, they still understand how BGP works. In the end, you have the same daemon running who implemented this function. But in addition, the OpenConfig model has this state tree, which you can actually retrieve through netconf. So there are no show commands for that, but you can issue an XML RPC call and say, okay, retrieve /BGP or /interfaces. And then you will get the whole tree underneath. Or you can do some XPath selection and say, okay, I'm only interested in interface name such and such, or and filter.
Okay, XPath, for people who don't know that, is the search language
Regular expression.
Yeah, regular expressions where you can filter the XML data to get the desired subtrees or
edits. Right, and I mean, the most natural way is you say /interface and then square bracket and you say name equal... Loopback or something, yes.
Okay, but you don't store the data on the device natively in OpenConfig format.
No.
So you can get the data from the device in whatever you have been using forever.
Correct.
In XML.
Yeah.
And if I want to get it in OpenConfig format, who does the translation?
It's done on the device, obviously.
Okay.
And there's another set of translation script that actually do that. We call that dynamic rendering.
So that script would execute the traditional show BGP something,
it
show
can,
command,
or
for
it
example.
Can actually talk directly to the daemons as well and extract that.
And then extract the right elements from the response.
And do the mapping.
And do the mapping and populate the OpenConfig data tree and return that thing to the operator.
Right.
Now, what if I am still a CLI jockey and I would like to see the OpenConfig thingies in my CLI? Can I do that?
Absolutely, yes. So now, when you add the Yang schema, what it does, it actually expands the CLI content, which was easy for us to do because we used this internal representation called DDL, which is pretty much, we can put them side by side as a blog post about that to Yang. It kind of looks similar. You can see maybe the source or where things came from. But yes, by adding that to the CLI, you actually get the full CLI extension. The text gets kind of long because you have the namespace in front of it. So you always have commands like OpenConfig colon interfaces, OpenConfig, column.bgp, and that's
You have to pipe that in.
Yeah, it have to. You can use command line expansion and such, all those tools
but still
help you, but you have to put it in. And the reason being is really is to make sure it's never going to break if you upgrade to a new release who has something new, or if you happen to be really experimental, say, hey, whenever the ITF comes in the BGP model, I want to load that in as well. And then you want to make sure they don't bite each other. In XML, it's easy. You have, like, in the beginning of your RPC command, you define the namespace, and then you have all just the XML tags. But in CLI, every attribute basically is prefixed with the namespace.
So in XML, for people who don't know XML, you can say in the beginning of an XML document or at any level within the document, oh, from here on, I'm using this namespace as the default namespace. And so you don't have to write the prefix at every element.
That's what I understand. Right?
Yeah, whereas with CLI, because we don't have the concept of default namespaces from this point on.
Correct, yes.
Yet.
Yes, well, we were debating about it, but it's hard to not break things.
Yeah.
Because it might be unique. You could even do some intelligence. Or, hey, you know what? If you enter this and it only exists in the OpenConfig one, then just take it.
Until there's
an overlap down the road in the future. Yeah. So.
Okay, to recap, you store the native data as entered as the operator in the configuration file.
Mm-hmm.
Then every time you need the configuration file, you send it through a translation script that generate configuration in internal Junos format that is then understood by the software running on the device.
Right.
And because the original configuration still has those data models in it, you can retrieve that easily.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easy part. If you want to get the operational data, you have another set of translation scripts that can do whatever.
Right.
Whatever, where whatever could include talking to the daemons or executing show commands.
Right.
Generates the data in whatever form, returns it back over the RPC call, like netconf. Or you can pipe that same data through another crazy language and get the show printout out of that.
No, there it's you basically have just the commands or the show commands that you always had.
Ah, okay.
So for operation state, if you really want to see what the OpenConfig view of the world is, then you have to use programmatic API, Google RPC or NetConf.
Ah, so you can't execute an OpenConfig get command through CLI?
Only for config, not for state.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, for state, it would be nice for troubleshooting purposes.
Right. But it's first and foremost programmatic access language. And I'm actually not even sure if all the other vendors also have a CLI support, because clearly it was not asked. At least whenever we from product management ask, well, couldn't this be kind of simplified, namespace kind of automated? And so, well, it's never intended for a CLI anyway. So just be happy with what we have now, which is cool.
So it's the first step. Be happy. We have it. Move on. Play with it.
Basically. And of course, I mean, the whole nature is really that there should be less and less CLI use and more programmatic access.
Yeah. This thing is available in Junos release 16.1.
Right, as a separate download, yes.
Yeah. So in the Junos release, you effectively have the underlying infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
The support
right.
from translation
yes.
script, the YAML compiler, all that stuff.
Right.
And then, as you said, the actual data models and the translation scripts are extra, and you can download them and install them onto the device.
That's correct. But you download them in one package to make it easy, which is actually dearly needed. I, for simplicity reasons, I figured, and I always like to do things my own way to learn, usually. And I started downloading the schema from the OpenConfig GitHub and added just the ones I thought I'm going to start with interfaces. So, I mean, how difficult can it be? So I loaded the interface schema, and then it complained about some dependencies that are not fulfilled. So I looked it up and downloaded the other schema file from the OpenConfig GitHub and so on. In the end, I had like 8 or 10 different files I downloaded. At that point, I gave up. I was like, okay, probably it's easy just to take the package.
So it's like RPM packages on Linux.
Without the automatic download, yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
So just download the whole thing, let it sort out the dependencies.
Yes. That's one point. ITF seems, at least for now, seems easier. I use the Softwire draft for another project, and the only dependency I had was like a type definition YAML schema, but otherwise there were no other dependencies. So there I really was able to just take the two files and load it and get done with it.
And where can I find these packages? Are they on Juniper's website?
They're
do I
on
have
the Juniper.
To talk to someone to get
no,
them?
No, they're on the Juniper download page. It's probably not that easy to find. A good entry point is developer.juniper.net. It's like a catch-all page we created, and then you just search that really long page through the topic you're interested in. If you search then for OpenConfig, it will give you the GitHub link to on GitHub and also the download packages and the documentation.
So go to developer.juniper.net, search for OpenConfig,
yeah,
and
that's what I get something useful. That's what I usually do, because I can't remember where things are placed.
Ah, I know the feeling.
Right.
Anything else we've missed?
If you want to have like a rundown on OpenConfig and Yang in 2 minutes, there's a YouTube video. Search for OpenConfig and YouTube and you find it.
Now we know how to get things working on Junos.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who is well familiar with NetConf and Yang and XML and all that stuff, that's all he needs.
Right.
What if I am not so very familiar with the intricacies of these three things that people aren't using every day? Let's be honest, most of the developers aren't. Are there any libraries that you could use to get the job done quicker, easier, whatever?
If Python is your preferred language...
No, no, it's
yes.
Perl, but okay, let's move
on. Okay, we have something in common then. With Python, you actually get PyEasy, which is a library that is maintained by Nitin Kumar from our development team, which gives you basically a NetConf interface to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's agnostic to what kind of Yang schema you use. Then there's also PyYang, which is like the validator for Yang. It's an open source project that is maintained by Martin and not from Juniper, from another company. And then last but not least, there's a PyYang bind, which gives you a class library that incorporates where you can give it Yang schema and it will create classes and libraries for you then to use interactively in Python to configure the device. And that is actually created by Rob Shockey from Google.
Okay, so the validator is the easiest one.
Which anybody uses who writes a Yang schema.
Yeah, so that's useless if you're not writing a Yang schema. But if
right.
you write a Yang schema, it's
then
the perfect tool to use.
It is, yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
PyEasy is your library that implements easy access to Juniper devices through NetConf.
It does basically the protocol writing,
yeah.
And Ansible is using that as well, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I know. Oh, don't get me started
okay.
on how many dependencies you need to install to get PyEasy to work.
That's where Docker has
okay.
your hand. But that's another topic.
Yeah. So with PyEasy, you skip all the nasty stuff about getting SSH access to the box and sending the XML envelopes and all that stuff. And you just exchange, you open
yeah.
the connection to the device,
yeah.
you exchange data with the device, you get something back, life
yeah.
is good.
Right. It's certainly, but it doesn't, by no means you are limited to that. I use Perl, as you mentioned, in another project, and I simply just send XML raw data through it.
Yeah, well,
if you're using
a real programmer can create raw XML data in
yeah.
any language.
And you get support to actually do that.
Yeah. Oh, Perl actually has pretty good XML
It does,
support.
Yes. And JSON as well. So that's...
Yeah. But still with PyEasy, you
mm-hmm.
have to construct your XML stream
you
yourself.
You still have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't get any help. And that's where then PyYangBind comes in. By
so that one takes the data model
yep.
and creates Python classes,
right.
which contain the leaves and the containers, which would be then other classes.
Which kind of then you can use, I think, going a little on a limb here, but it looks then like filling up an array with data.
Yeah. And then you're filling up that object with data. And then you go like, oh, give me XML. And
that
and magically, there's the XML that you send through PyEasy.
And then you use, exactly, then you pipe it to the other one. So that's kind of all the help you need.
So that's the crutch for people who don't want to learn what XML is.
Or use one of the commercially available Yang
yeah.
tools. And open source as well, like OpenData.
And final question, if I want to get started, so now I got interested in OpenConfig, I know it works on Junos, I have a Junos box, I know where to get the libraries,
mm-hmm.
but I still don't know anything about OpenConfig as such. Are there any OpenConfig 101 resources on the web or anything like that?
There are various blogs, and the best starting point is really go to openconfig.net, and then they have some documentation there.
And start exploring.
And start exploring, yeah. I mean, you can then, if you want to play with Junos, you can download an evaluation version of the VirtualMX and then add a package. Or most recently, we also have the virtual MX available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So you can spin up there a virtual machine and add the package yourself.
And you guys created some YouTube videos like a year ago explaining how this thing works, right?
There are various YouTube videos that shows a certain stage. And the most recent, which you can refer then to that blog, is really like a 2 or 3 minute wrap up, nicely produced.
Perfect. So thank you for this deep dive into OpenConfig on Junos, Marcel.
Thank you.
If people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
The best through my email address, mvget@juniper.net.
Thank you very much. And
thank you.
Whenever you guys have something new, let me know. I will do another podcast.
Happily to do so.
And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild. I'm Ivan Pepelnyak, and you can follow me on Twitter as @iOSHints, or even better, go to blog.ibspace.net and read my ramblings that the vendors so love.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Software Gone Wild. If you want to learn more about software-defined networking, network automation, and related topics, visit sdn.ipspace.net and explore our courses, books, webinars, and podcasts.